welcome to the Aggieville Alleycast podcast. We'll cover rain, shine, or anything in between. We're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news you so love. I'm Ace Edwards, right alongside
Connor Baltazor.
And welcome to this week's weekly recap, where we have a single basketball transfer to cover, which committed about 7 minutes ago from when we are recording this episode, as well as the Sunflower Showdown for the Batcats. But before we get into any of that, we want to thank the sponsor of the show, and that is Greg Arthur. If you want to be listed at the start of each episode and also help the show keep on trucking along, please be sure to visit the official supporters link in our podcast bio, and every single dollar really does count, and we really do appreciate it. But let's dive straight headfirst into the commitment of the former Cal State Fullerton Titan guard, and that is Max Jones. He's coming in. This will be his last year of eligibility, although he only spent 2 years at the D1 ranks after spending 2 years at the University of Tampa. He is a pretty solid piece, I think, is how I would describe Max Jones. Sorry, we're currently cat sitting, and the two cats sometimes aren't, well, one of the cats doesn't get along with the other one.
Yeah, but I like Max Jones. I think he's a really quality add. I mean, 15 points a game in any conference at the D1 level is generally pretty indicative of a good player. And he's also a really good outside shooter. He's career 39% at Cal State Fullerton. He shot 38.5% last year, which was a 1% drop from the year before. That's enough for me to not really care, or it's close enough for me to not particularly care about the drop. And he did that on almost two more three-point attempts per game as well. And he was taking a higher volume of shots and fewer minutes as well. He's also a pretty solid free-throw shooter, career 78.6% from the free-throw line. He took 6.3 free-throws a game as well last year. The only major concern is almost three turnovers a game to about two assists per game. On paper, that's a pretty big concern. I'd imagine that we're probably not going to ask him to be carrying as much of the offensive load as he was at Cal State Fullerton, because I think he was probably their second best player this last year.
Yeah.
So we'll be taking a bit of weight off of his shoulders and not asking him to do quite as much. So hopefully he can get those turnovers down, because 2.9 per game is pretty high. It's a big step up from his prior year, where he had 2.1 per game. But at the end of the day, he's a quality scorer, and he's good at knocking down open shots. And he's a good shooter from range, but he, for his 1.83 pointers per game, he still made 4.3 total baskets and just about 5 free throws per game. So he can score multiple levels. Not the most efficient when it isn't from three. Actually shot better from three than from two last season. But again, maybe that's something that we can get figured out. But as a grad transfer, he's going to come in and be a really quality shooter for us and bring some offense in.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that the reason why he didn't start or play in as many games this last season is because he was injured on the back end of the year for the last month. But I really do like this ad, which is, this is kind of, it's pretty well known at this point that this might be a course correction from missing on Khalif Battle, who, that's an entire saga that I don't want to go into right now. But this is still, even independent of that, this is a solid pickup. And I think the comp that I've seen tossed around is a more offensively minded Desi Sills, which, yes, yes, please, thank you.
Yeah, if he can fill that quality role that Desi filled, which we really just need him to be a high effort offensive guy, at least at this point in time, if the roster fills out the way that we hope. But it's big to get another spot filled. So I think we have four left now, four or five.
Yeah.
And I'm not really counting on Arthur Kaluma being back. I am excited, though, for what remains. It was big to get this commitment when we did, because losing out on Khalif Battle and also Cliff Amari. That was a pretty big loss in the portal for K-State, but it's good to bounce back quickly and not let it phase us too much, but still fair to have had some concerns, I think, but hopefully we'll pick up a few more commits and maybe not end up with as good of players as Khalif Battle, Cliff Amari, but still some really quality players to pair with the already good guys that we have.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it for the basketball recruiting news. Now we can go into the Lone Baseball Series, which is the Sunflower Showdown. This is probably one of the most tightly contested Sunflower Showdowns in a while, in that both teams are not bad, or at least both teams are good. KU was on the outside looking in of the NCAA tournament. K-State's firmly in that three range somewhere. So this was an important series for both sides. K-State ends up winning the series but dropping the middle game. The first game was a 3-2 Wildcat victory in which K-State scored the first and then had to come back in the eighth inning with two runs, which happened from the Kansas kid Nick English singling up the middle to get in another run to break the tie up against his brother's team and also his family's team, apparently. That's not to discredit Kalen Culpepper's double that knocked in Jaden Parsons to tie up the game, but, you know, despite the low score, it was a pretty fun game, all things considered. It's one of those games where you could definitively say it was pretty solid pitching, not just bad offense, which, yes, there is a very strong difference in baseball.
Yeah, we knew going in that KU did have two really, really good starting pitchers that will probably both be all Big 12. But the whole weekend was really filled with great pitching. K-State definitely shot themselves in the foot twice in particular on, I think it was that Friday game. Maybe it's the Saturday game.
I think it was a Saturday game.
Yeah, but still, the bats came through when we needed them. So some pretty quality offensive performances here. Jaden Parsons, he scored two runs in this one on two walks. Kalen Culpepper was 2-for-4, had that huge double in the bottom of the eighth to tie the game. Brady Day went 0-for-3 and drew a walk. But Nick English, he was kind of the man of the hour in this one, 2-for-4. With the go-ahead RBI in the bottom of the eighth. A massive weekend for Nick English. Daniel Rivera went 3-for-3 with a walk in this one, which I think kind of went under the radar because none of his hits were particularly great hits. They were all kind of bloop singles for the most part. And I know he had at least one that he kind of cued off the end of the bat. But hits are hits, and it's tough to go 3-for-3 no matter what type of swing you're putting out. Plus drawing a walk as well, so perfect on-base day for Daniel Rivera, kind of overshadowed by Kalen Culpepper and Nick English. Pelletier went 1-for-4, but did leave four runners on. Chuck Ingram, he went 0-for-3, so he's kind of continued his slump. And David Bishop, he went 1-for-3 in his own right.
Yeah. In terms of pitching, there was only three pitchers. It was Owen Borma, who went 7, 8 hits, only 2 earned, 1 strikeout, one walk to 8 strikeouts, 99 pitches. So really solid outing from Borma. Blake Dean came in, pitched one inning, gave up one walk, but 2 strikeouts. He also hit a batter. And then Tyson Nabors did the freshman Tyson Nabors special, as we used to call it, where he walked the bases loaded. Everyone was really scared. And then he proceeded to just strike out the next two batters. Tyson Nabors special.
Yeah. On his final strikeout, there was a bit of controversy going around on Friday because the final strikeout pitch was allegedly outside.
It was outside. But it should have been called the strike earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was another pitch. I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry,
it's okay.
There was another pitch earlier in the at bat that should have been strike 3 that didn't go called. So we will be calling that a makeup call.
Yeah, I think it shook out the way that it probably should have anyways. But yeah, Tyson just kind of has that closer gene in him where he just likes to create pressure for himself. I've been playing MLB The Show the last week or so, and I created a closing pitcher, and they always have a voice line about closers that create their own pressure. So I guess Tyson fits into that archetype that the show announcers have carved out. But that's his fifth save on the year. Great, great start for Borma as well, getting 8 strikeouts in 7 innings. A lot of hits in this game for not a lot of runs. This was one of the most traditional baseball games that we've seen maybe all season, which I think is maybe an indicator that both teams were taking this series very, very seriously. Reese Dutton for KU also had a really good start in his own right, 7 2/3. They gave up 10 hits and didn't get any strikeouts, but only gave up 3 earned runs. So we had that going for him. But yeah, this was a really excellent pitching day for both teams. I know Dutton at one point on an inning-ending double play spiked the baseball into the ground, which in the moment is annoying, but I'm very happy that the teams care enough to actually do that. Because I think Pete said after the series that the weekend as a whole was really good for baseball in the region. I really agree with that, because this was the best Sunflower Showdown series in terms of quality that I've seen in a long, long, long time.
Yeah. I mean, last year, if you just had basically 2 football games back to back.
Yeah, last year, while they were very entertaining for different reasons, they definitely weren't the best baseball, per se. But they were definitely fun, particularly if you're a K-State fan. But this year's games were genuinely entertaining and really well played for the most part, with the exception of some base running issues for K-State.
Yeah. But the second game was the one that K-State lost. Unfortunately, they did end up getting shut out 4-0. This was also the game in which KU fans forgot how to behave and had like 100 replies to the K-State final score tweet. I'm just going to leave that one there. But in terms of offense, there's not a whole lot to say. Brendan Jones ended up going 2-for-4. Jaden Parsons 1-for-3. Brady Day ends up going 2-for-3 with a walk. And then David Bishop goes 1-for-3. That's about it. That's really it. You can't even say that we left a whole lot on base because we left 8, which, yes, it's 1 above what we would like. But, I mean, whenever you get shut out in a rivalry game, you're going to be sad. I was sad.
Yeah. The pitching in this one was still quality from the K-State side, just not quite as good. Jackson Wentworth gets credit with a loss here. He went 5 innings, went 7 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, 2-7 strikeouts, and hit a batter as well in 98 pitches. Cole Weisenbaker, he went 2 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 strikeouts, and hit a batter, so a little bit erratic for Cole. And then J.J. Slack went 2 innings, gave up 2 hits, and did not allow any runs. Only 18 pitches for him. And that time, so it was a fine day. The staff probably should have done a little bit better if we wanted to win, but also at some point you need some run support, and they didn't get any run support, so that's a huge loss for K-State. And this was a big win for KU as well, because I think similarly to our perspective that we really needed to win the series, KU really needed to take a game at least. And so both teams end up kind of walking out of this series, like, they'll never admit it, but like in terms of RPI implications, they got exactly what they needed and nothing more out of this series.
I also think it's worth noting that in this game the problem with Jack was he just kept getting into full counts, and then they just kept fouling pitches off, and that's really what got him into trouble and why he could only go 5 with 98 pitches. Like, he was starting to show towards, because the first 4 innings he was just embarrassing people. Like, he did not allow a run. He never really was in any danger. The only problem was the pitch count. And then the pitch count became the problem, and he got tired. And that's when KU jumped on him.
Yeah, he just wasn't getting ahead in counts the way that he needed to, which is unfortunate, because his stat line, while not bad by any stretch of the imagination, it's not particularly impressive. But yeah, he definitely could have done a lot better, but I'm not worried about Wentworth at all. And the pitching staff didn't really have a worrying day for the most part. 13 hits is a bit much, but still they kept the runs to a pretty low number for the most part. KU just had a really good pitching day. Dominic Vogel, their day two starter, he's pretty incredible. He'll be probably a freshman of the year or something, I think. I think he's a true freshman.
He is.
Which at least that means that he's only going to be here for two more years before he's like a second round pick. But he's really, really good.
Yeah. I'll save that thought for the very end. K-State ends up winning the last game as well. This was a 4-2 victory in which Blake Dean ends up picking up the victory and Tyson Neighbors gets his sixth save on the year. And once again, in the late stages of it, it was Nick English who was the hero. So Nick English is really the true freshman's really the MVP for the series going up against his brother's team. So, you know, at Thanksgiving, you know he's going to bring that one up because, you know, I would. But you have the offense.
Yeah. Nick English, after an 0-for-4 day in Game 2, he moved into the leadoff spot and went 2-for-4, had that huge 2 RBI hit in the 7th inning, did have 2 strikeouts, but all in all had a really good day. Had some pretty quality plays in the outfield as well this weekend, as I recall. He had, I don't remember which game it was, but he had at one point a relay throw into Bishop, who went home. And both were perfect throws to save a run at the plate. Brennan Jones went 0-for-2, but did score a run off of 2 walks in this one. Kalen Culpepper went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts, unfortunately. Brady Day went 0-for-3, but he did have an RBI on a sac fly. Daniel Rivera, 0-for-3, drew a walk. Jaden Parsons, though, went 3-for-4 in this one, and also stole a base. Scored a run. Jaden Parsons has really been excellent down the stretch for K-State. He's been one of the few more consistent parts of K-State's offense as of late, which has been really great. Rafael Pelletier went 1-for-4, 2 strikeouts. Chuck Ingram went 0-for-2, but did score a run, drew a walk, and he had a sacrifice fly to bring in a run as well, but still 2 strikeouts. So while the strikeout numbers and at-bats are still not great right now for Chuck, at least he was able to put together a fairly decent performance despite not getting a hit, because bringing in a run in this close of a game and drawing a walk and scoring in this close of a game is just absolutely massive. And David Bishop went 1-for-3. He's still pretty clearly hobbled, but still managed to steal a base at some point in this game. I think it might have been more of a fielder's indifference situation, but he's clearly not running 100%, but he's still plus defender at first, regardless. He just has really great defensive skill, and he's kind of been putting it together behind the plate recently as well.
Yeah, which that was sort of our big question mark with him at the beginning of the year, was if he was going to put it together at the plate, and he has, all to his credit. But in terms of pitching, Josh Winthrop got the start, went 4 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 strikeout, 60 pitches. Then Adam Arthur came in relief, pitched a third of an inning, got 1 walk, 1 strikeout, and 1 wild pitch. Then Blake Dean sort of, again, as he's done a lot, especially towards the back end of the year, sort of calmed everything down, going 3 2/3, only 1 hit allowed, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts, and 1 intentional walk. And then Tyson Neighbors came in for the last inning. We were officially referenced by the K-State baseball page, which is hilarious. But he goes 1 inning, gives up 1 hit, and then strikes out the side. Tyson Neighbors behavior.
Yeah, it's a pretty typical Tyson Neighbors outing. I had a couple of really deep at-bats, if I remember. A few just kept fouling off, but he ended up winning again, or getting the save, I should say. But he won all those at-bats at the end because he, at the end of the day, there's just only so much that you can do to defend yourself against his variety of pitches. At some point, you're just going to guess wrong. And he pretty much is just kind of relying on that. You know, he's going to keep throwing you 100-mile-per-hour fastballs and, like, 85-mile-per-hour hammer curves that break, like, 20 feet. And just going to bet that at some point you're going to, like, guess incorrectly. And that almost always happens. But I think also on pitching, Blake Dean, I think, got credited with 2 wins this weekend. I think he got one the first game.
Yep.
And the 2 wins that Casey had in this series were closed out with Blake Dean as the middle relief or setup guy and Tyson Nabors as the closer. So with Jackson Wentworth now moving into the starting rotation, the Dean-Nabors combo may be the knockout punch for K-State going forward.
Yeah. But in terms of what's left on the season for the Batcats, it's a series at West Virginia in Morgantown. Got to pick up at least one here. West Virginia is no joke. They have who's probably going to be a top 5, if not top 3, pick in Weatherby at second base, who unfortunately is, or Weatherhold. I don't know why I call him Weatherby, but he's going to be a top 5, if not a top 3 pick. That's how legit he is, and of course he's healthy, you know, 2 weeks before they play. Never mind. But, and then after that, it is just up against BYU in the next weekend series, so there are only 6 regular season games for the Cats left. And as it stands right now, they are sitting at RPI 38, which, again, would pretty comfortably put them in, but probably on the lower end of a 3 seed, which means that they would probably be playing someone, say, like a Texas A&M, a Kentucky, an Arkansas, or a Clemson. I'd rather not.
For what it's worth, the most recent bracketology I saw had K-State with either Indiana State or with Santa Clara in one of those 2 regionals, which, again, when you're picking a region to be in, you're getting a 1 seed anyway, so there's not really a great option most of the time. But still, K-State at this point is still solidly in. It isn't just a like on the right side of the bubble. They're not on the bubble right now. If they win like 4 of their next 6 and pick up a game in the Big 12 tournament, they will be just fine.
Yeah.
And also Northeastern is actually 2 spots ahead of K-State right now in RPI. So that win over Northeastern is aging really well right now.
Yeah. But do you have any final notes before we sign off?
Baseball has, they responded well this past weekend after their just absolute disaster class at Nebraska. So they got some big wins. They know what's at stake, and I'm glad that they were able to put together some wins. Basketball, I'm hoping the portal stays active, and I can't wait for football season.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I got as well. So thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. If you want to follow or contact the show, you can follow us just about anywhere at Aggieville ACATS. And if you want to email us, we're AggievilleAlleyCats@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on a more personal note, I'm at ACEdwards00.
I am at Connor Baltazor, capital C, capital B.
And if you want to support the show financially, please be sure to check out the official Aggieville Alley Cats merch store, as well as the supporters link, both in our podcast and Twitter bios. But most importantly, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. Where come rain, shine, or anything in between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. Stay safe, Alley Cats.